If you just have a normal egg from, like, take it out of your fridge, put it on the Seder plate, fine. Use the egg. If you have a plastic egg from the Easter egg hunt, what am I, the Seder police? I'm not coming to your house. Just put it on the plate. Plastic egg is better than no egg. Yes? Okay.
Are you planning a Jewish or interfaith wedding? Are you lost on where to even begin planning the ceremony, let alone finding a rabbi to help you? Well, it doesn't matter whether one of you is Jewish or you're both Jewish. You deserve a guide. So take a deep breath. I promise it will all be okay. Welcome to Your Jewish Wedding with Rabbi Leanne. Here, I can be everyone's rabbi. Yours too. My guests and I will share everything we know to help make your Jewish or interfaith wedding full of tradition and perfectly yours.
Well, hello, everyone. It is so good to be here with you on the Your Jewish Wedding podcast. You want your weather report? I know. It is April 11th. It's warm and it's raining and it is springtime. Now, I can't handle too much rain, but as you know, if it's warm, it's okay, especially when I know it's going to make my garden more beautiful. So we are just loving the April flowers here. No. We are just loving the April showers because we know they're going to bring May flowers. I've been waiting to plant some things in my garden that I know the ground temperature has to be a certain temperature for a few days for. So I'm loving this. Now, what I don't love is that April is like my family's month of just franticness. Okay, we have three birthdays, including mine. One of my daughter's birthdays is 2 days after mine. Another one of my daughter's birthdays is 6 days after that. My sister's birthday is 6 days before mine. And of course, since it's April and I have theater kids, what do we have? That's right, the High School Musical. And because we're Jewish, what else do we have in April? That's right, we have Passover, which in my house, Passover is a humongous production, just because I may have mentioned this before, but in our family, the number one way we wanted to educate our children about the Jewish holidays is through hospitality, because you all have heard the tired old joke that still makes people smile about Jewish holidays, that they're all about the same thing. They tried to kill us. They didn't succeed. Let's eat. Which is to say that Jewish holidays almost all have some specific type of food or food event connected to them. And we have tried to make that food event, which is usually a big meal, a really joyful time for the kids. And what does that mean in our house? It means letting them invite literally whoever they want for Shabbos, for Passover, for Yom Kippur break fast, for Rosh Hashanah dinner. It's all whoever wants to come for Hanukkah, please let them come. So, you know, we've got a house that was built in 1938. It's not large. At Passover time, we've got not one, but two folding tables in the living room. We're moving furniture. We're making hundreds of matzo balls. We're making at least a dozen pounds of brisket, chickens, you name it. It's a whole multi-week thing. I've got several lists. So it occurred to me, though, that, you know, I was thinking about it. I'm the kind of person that my brain's just like always going. I'm always thinking about something, especially when I'm doing like menial tasks. Okay. So people say you do your best thinking in the shower. That's because it's a habit task that you're doing and it lets your mind wander. Well, that's kind of how I am when I'm cleaning the house or doing grocery shopping or whatever it is. And it occurred to me, all my experiences with wedding couples, I've spoken about this so many times on this podcast that I will talk to a couple for the first time, and one of the most common things I hear is an apology. It's an apology for not knowing all the ins and outs of a Jewish wedding, all the symbolism of this, all the history of that. People feel overwhelmed. And I want to say, I appreciate that overwhelm. And I understand how hard it is to overcome that That sense of I'm not enough, I don't know what's going on, I don't really belong here, to overcome that enough to even contact me, okay? So before we go any further, all of my wedding couples, any of you who have touched base with me, been brave enough to reach out to a rabbi, even though you were imagining so many roadblocks and complications that might come from that, congratulations, and I'm very proud of you. And I want to say that if you have a goal or a dream or a vision of living a Jewish life, of building a family that celebrates the Jewish holidays, that, you know, this situation of having this feeling like, man, I don't know enough, I'm not good enough, maybe why bother, maybe giving up before you even begin, that is going to apply to the Jewish holidays as well. It can seem daunting to plan a Passover Seder. Now, some of you have an idea of what a Passover Seder is. It's a really multifaceted meal experience. Okay, in the same way that a Jewish wedding ceremony can be a really multifaceted experience. And, you know, I've talked about this before. Jews, we like our stuff. We like to have symbolic stuff because it carries wonderful memories with us from event to event. It represents our family's history. It reminds us of joyous occasions. So just as with a Jewish wedding, you know, may be worried about the chuppah and the kiddush cups and the plate for breaking and the glass for breaking and the tallis and all the things that it might seem like are required for you to do this Jewish thing, you also may see images or accounts of a Passover Seder that, oh my gosh, look at all this stuff you need. Okay. Just try until we get to that part to put that worry aside. I am here to tell you, don't worry about it ever. Okay. You can still have a Passover Seder with the stuff you have in your house. I promise. I know I sound like one of those morning show segments about how to make a beautiful recipe with the stuff you have in your pantry. And then the stuff in your pantry is like saffron and like buckwheat pasta. And you're like, come on, I don't have that in my pantry. And you guys are just trying to get me to watch this. That's not what this is. You'll see. Okay. You really do have this stuff in your house, or it's at your grocery store. Easy peasy. Now, beyond the stuff and beyond like not knowing prayers and whatever, which we'll get to in a second. Well, I guess that's what we're doing now. Beyond the stuff, there is just not knowing what to do. Okay, you know that it can be a complicated meal. You know that you've usually seen it maybe led by somebody who speaks a lot of Hebrew, knows what she's doing. Don't worry. You might be afraid of like looking silly with your friends or feeling silly, which I think for a lot of people is kind of worse, right? Because a lot of you, including me, by the way, we often have something they call imposter syndrome, right? Like I'm acting like I'm this thing, but I know that I'm not legit or I'm not authentic or I don't know enough and everyone's going to see through me. It's going to be really weird and it's going to be really embarrassing. I might as well not do it in the first place, okay? That's Jewish imposter syndrome. I see it all the time with people planning weddings. Breaks my heart. And I just know that a lot of you also have imposter syndrome around Passover, okay? I have it too. By the way, I have it too all the time. I still have it. I'm a rabbi. I've been a rabbi for 15 years. I still have that Jewish imposter syndrome, rabbi imposter syndrome. You think that every time I don't go online and Google something, like this past week when I Googled, what's the Jewish blessing to say for an eclipse? Oh, come to find out, we didn't actually have one, not like an official one, until the conservative movement debated it, like in our days. The more you know, right? We're learning all the time. And I think that not knowing something like that, something that seems like so simple, definitely something a rabbi should know. Like 10 years ago when I was 32, 35, that would have really embarrassed me. If somebody had asked me, what's the blessing for an eclipse? Even if I had asked myself, what's the blessing for an eclipse? Why don't you know that? Oh my gosh, so embarrassing. You should know that. You should know that. Somebody told me once, don't should yourself, okay? But also there's the societal vibe that we sort of revere religious scholars or like rabbis, you know, religious authority figures. And we have this feeling that they know everything, okay? But listen, I've said it before on this podcast. I know for sure. I will say it 18 times. If I say it 100 times again, here's what it means to be a rabbi, okay? Number one, I know a lot more than average Jews, not all Jews, but average Jews about Jewish stuff. I've spent the time to learn that in an institution, and that institution, an educational institution, decided that I would be an acceptable representative for the Jewish community. That's it. That's literally it. If you want, you can add a third thing that makes me a rabbi, which is that people hire me to do their stuff. They trust me with their life cycle ceremonies. But that's a little, that's even a little specific, right? Because I was still a rabbi even when I wasn't doing so many weddings. Okay. Anyway. There, see, I just had to pause because I got a phone call from my daughter about the High School Musical. Ima, can you bring my black pants? Okay. Busy time of year, but we are making the dream work. Okay. Since I got really into doing more weddings, I have met couples, and each and every couple needs something different from me, okay? If you're one of my wedding couples, you know we work together individually. There is always some problem solving that needs to go into planning some aspect of your wedding. We tackle it together. We figure out the best way to do things, and we have a beautiful ceremony, as you know. A lot of the time, I need to really look into some Jewish stuff before I fully understand the right way to approach a question. So what does it mean when you routinely encounter situations where you realize what you don't know? This is another thing I say all the time. The more you learn, the less you know, which means the more you learn, the more you realize you don't know, right? There are endless bodies and streams of knowledge out in the world, and you don't know most of them. Nobody knows most of them, right? That's the point of experts. That's the point of following our passion, because we can learn about those things and then share them with other people to make their lives better. And God willing, each and every one of us does that in this life in some way, okay? And that's the way that life should be, right? All of us should be always learning new things, always growing in knowledge and depth and experience. So the fact, if you don't know anything about a Passover Seder, that should be your motivation and your excitement for saying, okay, this is a starting point. This is where it starts. And I don't know how old you are. You're listening to this podcast. Maybe you're 20, maybe you're 30. How many decades of life, God willing, do you have left to learn more and to do more and to change and to adapt and to be sillier one year, to be more serious another year, and each and every year investigate a new part of how to change your Passover Seder? And I do say change because change is such an important element of the Passover Seder, right? We think about it as this thing that's written down in a book and we have to follow and we have to know. But in fact, change may be the most important element of a Passover Seder, changing things up every year. And if the thing that you change up this year is that you just do the thing at all, you do any form of the thing, well, isn't that a wonderful place to start? We're going to take a quick break. And when we come back, I am going to tell you right here, right now on this podcast, as you're listening, how you can host a Passover Seder with no preparation other than a few things you need to gather from your house, a couple things to pick up at the grocery store, and what you learn on this podcast when we come back. So welcome back, everyone, to our episode on leading a Passover Seder. This episode is all you need to lead a Passover Seder, even if, maybe especially if, you have no idea what you're doing, okay? And I'm here to tell you, that is no excuse. Maybe that's what I'm trying to say in a gentle, loving way. Oh, Rabbi Leanne, we don't know anything about leading a Passover Seder, so we're not going to have one. Wrong. What I want you to walk away from this podcast saying is, Rabbi Leanne, we don't know how to lead a Passover Seder, so we're going to start this year. Okay. I want everyone to listen to me very carefully. In fact, I'm going to put the timestamp for this moment in the podcast. It looks like it's going to be about 15 minutes in. This is what, if you're pressed for time, I want anybody in the podcast, I'll put it in the show notes, I'll put it in the description. I want everyone to fast forward to this moment. Okay. What is a Passover Seder? When you look at you know, Jewish accounts on Instagram or when you Google what is a Passover Seder, more likely than not, you guys are going to get a really, you know, multi-step process, long explanations, lots of sentences. Now, I know nobody has that attention span. Nobody has time to digest that. It seems like a lot of work, okay? I'm going to give it to you in a short sentence. A Passover Seder is a meal that specifically discusses and celebrates the story of the Jewish people's exodus from Egypt. Okay, that's it. That's it. Now, the traditional Passover Seder, as we know it, has been with the Jewish people since the 15th century. So like 600 years, right? But I'm talking about the codified, written down, you know, here's all of our readings and information that we've got from all the rabbis and the Talmud and the Mishnah and the Agada and all and the Baraitas, everything before and after the Talmud that we think is really important for the Passover Seder that's been passed down through our meals. We're going to write it down in a book. The Passover Haggadah as we know it, the Haggadah is the prayer book specifically for Passover Seder, for the Passover meal, was only printed on its own, that is separate from a prayer book, for like the last 400 or 500 years. So before that, we have little mentions here and there of people sitting down at Passover and discussing specific topics, which is all I want you to do. Oh, now see, that was my doorbell with the grocery delivery because Shabbos is tomorrow and we have a High School Musical. Yes, that's right. Oh my goodness. So anyway, there's a lot of cool history about how the Haggadah, which is the Seder prayer book, like I said, and the Passover Seder itself with all its symbolic foods. There's a lot of cool history about how that was all developed. I'm going to link to that in the show notes. And if you are a history nerd or a text nerd, you are going to absolutely love it. But I'm not going to make everybody else listen to it right now, okay? The point is that the fully compiled official text of the Haggadah as we know it has only been around for like 500 years. And guess what? It's still changing. Right? It's changing all the time. I talked about change. Let's make a change. We're always changing. The Jewish people are changing. We're always adding new things to the Passover meal, to the story we tell. You're going to, if you go on Amazon right now, you're like, all right, well, what's the Haggadah? I want to see the Haggadah, Rabbi Leanne. Maybe you're already on Amazon. You're looking, there's a million Haggadahs. There's a Harry Potter Haggadah. There's a civil rights Haggadah. There's this one and that one. There's the picture book Haggadah. There's the Where's Waldo Haggadah. Yes, I have it. Okay, don't worry about that now. If this is your starting point, right now, close that Amazon tab. Do not even buy a Haggadah, okay? We'll get to that later, okay? I'm going to tell you right now what you must have for a Passover Seder. I made you a promise at the beginning of this episode. You don't have to buy anything special. The food I want you to buy is not special. I promise. Okay. You need a Seder plate. What, Rabbi Leanne, you just said we don't need anything special. Because you don't. You already have, it can be a huge plate that's made for the Seder. So maybe somebody gave you a Seder plate for your wedding. It could be a Seder plate. It's a huge plate that either it holds a bunch of tiny dishes like pinch bowls or ingredient prep dishes. Or it has little indentations where you can put the specific food that's supposed to go on it, okay? If you don't have a humongous plate, you don't have a serving tray, man, I don't know. Maybe you have like a cookie sheet that isn't really worn in like mine are or whatever. If you don't have anything big like that, you don't have like a charcuterie board. I know all you trendy people have like a big wooden board you can put stuff on. But if you don't, fine, okay? It doesn't have to all be on one plate. It could be just a bunch of little dishes all collected together, okay? Rabbi Leanne, we don't have pinch bowls. We don't have ingredient prep dishes. We're not cooks. We don't whatever. Fine. Get a bunch. You have six coffee mugs? I bet you have six coffee mugs. Go get six coffee mugs and put them in a little circle or two little rows on your table. Okay. Some people say for a Seder plate, you only need five. Okay. So now let's say you've got your coffee mug. Maybe you have your pinch bowls. I don't know. Do you guys have a bunch of cats? Because I have three cats. They're indoor, outdoor, so they're not like always here, like in our house. But I find myself like always having so many dirty cat bowls, So I got like a bunch just so there would always be at least three clean ones that I could plop some food in and put it in front of them, you know. So I think I have like nine. Fine. Do you have a lot of little cat bowls? Use those. I don't care. Put tinfoil on the bottom. I'm not coming to your Seder. Nobody's judging you. Okay. You've got your six little vessels or dishes. Whoa. Oh, maybe they're like bathroom cups. Do you guys use bathroom cups? I have four teenagers in the house, as you know, if you listen to this podcast. Having a permanent bathroom cup, like some people have like a plastic toothbrush cup or whatever on there, like a glass one next to their sink all the time. The number of disgusting cups, lost cups, whatever. So I know it's not earth friendly, but we use the little paper cups for the bathroom cups. You need to rinse your mouth, you wash, mouthwash, you get the paper cup, you throw it away. Fine. Go to your bathroom and get those six paper cups. If you live in Columbus and you don't have paper cups, you don't have coffee mugs, I don't know what's going on with you. You need six bathroom cups. Come to my house. Call me. Send me an email. I'll give you my address. You can come get six bathroom cups from my house. Okay? No excuses. Fine. Here's what you need to put in each of the six things, all right? Now, this is where you're going to make your shopping list. You're going to Kroger this week. You're going to go to Whole Foods because you're bougie and you don't have children and you can afford it. That's fine. Enjoy yourself. Maybe you're going to the farmer's market because that's what you do. Okay, here are the things you need to look out for. You need to have in one of these dishes, traditionally it's parsley, but it has to be something green that everyone can eat a bite of. And it has to grow out of the earth. So traditionally it's parsley. I guess you can use like celery. You could use cucumbers. Any like green vegetable that you all can take a little symbolic bite of because you're going to use it as a symbolic food. You're going to mention it and hold it up in the air. You know, if it looks beautiful, it's better. Okay. Fine. Second dish, horseradish or some other sharp spicy food. We say sharp. Sharp is like how they say it in modern Hebrew. Harif means like sharp. Like it's spicy, but not like it just makes you sort of twist up your face. It's bitter. Okay. The idea of this food is that it should be bitter. Maror is the meaning of the word that is on the Seder plate for this. Okay. If you have like a traditional Seder plate, it's maror. Some people I've heard will use kimchi. They'll use like wasabi, I guess maybe like a jalapeno hot sauce, but it has to be something you can bite, okay? Or you can eat a little bit of it, okay? It has to be something like distinct. So I'd rather it not be hot sauce, but like if it is fine. Like I said, I'm not coming here. I'm not coming to check up on you. There's no Seder police. Next dish, charoset. Okay, so this is some food. It's like a sauce or a dip that resembles paste. So it represents the mortar that the Jews spread between the bricks of the temple when we were slaves in the land of Egypt. Okay, so it can be anything like that. You think it's like, you know, spinach artichoke dip. If it's like, I don't know, I've been known to use applesauce because I hate making charoset. Here's what traditional charoset is. The chopped up apples with raisins, walnuts, cinnamon, wine. So it's so potchkin-y. Potchkin-y is like a... To potchkin in the kitchen is like, it's fussy. It's a fussy food to have to fix. I don't like chopping things. I don't like standing in the kitchen. I don't like anything that I can't set and forget. That's basically my cooking, set it and forget it. Okay. You could probably, if you are going to Whole Foods or you're going to like one of the fancy Giant Eagles that does like fresh ground peanut butter, it's like a little chunky, you know, it looks like something mortar, you know, use your imagination. You could probably use that. Okay. Whatever. The Sephardi recipes, in my opinion, are much better. They use like smushed up dates, nuts, and like spices. Oh, so good. If you want to make charoset in your house, fine, look up some recipes and you'll see. If somebody who cooks, somebody who likes to potchkin in the kitchen, then you will enjoy this aspect. And it may be you're famous for charoset, but don't, you know, be careful, because if you make really good charoset, then you will become that person that always has to like bring it. So just prepare yourself that you'll have to bring the charoset to every Passover. For, you know, until you die. Such is life. Next, the shank bone. Now, guys, this is a symbolic bone. Okay, so we love it actually when we can get one from a lamb, which is what it represents. It's the sacrifice of the Passover lamb from the story. And it doesn't have to be from a lamb. We got some. We've had lamb ones a couple times, and they're humongous. It's so funny. But We are a meat-eating family, so it doesn't have to be actually even a real bone. People make them out of modeling clay. Some people will use a beet, which I think is honestly a little gross, but they use it because it like looks like it's bloody. Whatever. Whatever represents a bone. You have like a bone from a chicken leg. Use that, whatever it is. Okay? An egg. This is the next one. 5 out of 6. Some people say this is the final one. You need an egg. Okay. You can use, when Easter and Passover are close together, which is most of the time, use an Easter egg. Use one of the pretty dyed eggs. Okay. It matches your tablescape fine. You can use an Easter egg. A lot of people like to be bougie about this egg. So they will like roast their eggs in like special concoctions to make them the shells beautiful colors, which is also an Easter thing. I'm not precious about it. I have a hard-boiled egg with the shell on, and then I brush it with oil, and I kind of like hold it close to the oven flame. So it toasts a little bit, it gets kind of brown, and it looks different from like a normal egg. If you just have a normal egg from like take it out of your fridge, put it on the Seder plate, fine. Use the egg. If you have a plastic egg from the Easter egg hunt, what am I, the Seder police? I'm not coming to your house. Just put it on the plate. Plastic egg is better than no egg. Yes? Now, here's the sixth one. This is chazeret, and I still don't fully understand. Talk about things I still don't know. I don't fully understand why we have two bitter things on the Seder plate. Usually it's like something green. Some people, it's another bitter, sharp, harif food that people use. So, but it doesn't have to be like super edible like the first one. So maybe this is the difference. Okay, you pass around one and everybody eats it. Maybe the second bitter thing is something that's not meant to be eaten. It's just like another reminder. Maybe it's green, but also bitter. So we have the green parsley and the bitter horseradish, but also something that's green and bitter. I don't know. What are we learning right now? We're making up reasons for the Seder plate right now. It's to learn that new life and bitterness can always exist. Maybe they must exist together. There you go. Talk about that at your Seder. Okay. Now your Seder plate's done. If your Seder plate is a collection of bathroom cups, it's still a Seder plate. Mazel tov. And I hope that you take a picture of it and you, in maybe whatever random dinner dish you used for the Seder plate becomes your actual Seder plate. It's a funny thing you talk about every year. Oh, this was our first Seder plate. How cute. Gosh, we just got married. Life was so frantic. We were broke, whatever it is, you know. Here's what else you need. You need a stack of matzah. Last thing you need is a bunch of wine. You can use grape juice. Yes, you can use a special beverage. Yes, that is a thing you can do. But traditionally, it's wine. Traditionally, everyone at that Seder drinks 4 glasses of wine. Now, I don't like to have big drunk Seders. So a long time ago, I went to the thrift store and I got a bunch of like those tiny little wine glasses that you can find there. Do you guys know what I'm talking about? And that's what we use for the 4 glasses. The kids love them, by the way. They'll put like the sparkling grape juice you get from Costco in the 3-pack. You know, they'll like fill it up. They'll pretend they'll be like loopy. They're not actually drinking. One of my sons will drink with me. He's so fun. He's such a mensch. He did shots with me at Purim. He's 15. Love it. But you know what? It's interesting because his friends don't like it when he drinks. It gives me hope for the future. I don't know. Maybe they won't all drink their faces off in college. We'll see. Even if people drink their faces off in college, they're usually like normal functional members of society by the time they get married, right? You all are. Okay. All right. I want to pause here and talk about the meal. Now, I said it's a meal and that's all it is. The number one commandment of Passover as a week-long holiday, not the Passover Seder, but as Passover as a holiday, is we are not supposed to eat bread. And the rabbis determined pretty early on that, you know, that means you don't eat anything with wheat, oats, rye, spelt, or barley. Okay, so no beer, no tortillas, no SpaghettiOs, no pizza rolls. That got when my daughter was like 6, she had a full-on meltdown because we said no pizza rolls at Passover. Okay, no pizza, obviously. If you want to have a Passover Seder and the meal is not kosher for Passover, I'm happy that you're having a Passover Seder. That is okay. In the spirit of Passover, I would probably not encourage you to like order a pizza. I don't know. If you order a pizza for your Passover Seder, maybe get like the thin crust. Okay. The story says that we had to leave Egypt very quick and we couldn't bake bread. And the matzah is an important part of the Seder, the flat bread that shows that we had so little that we didn't even have time to have the luxury of waiting for bread to rise. Okay. So in the spirit of Passover, maybe try like a gluten-free sort of situation. You know what's really good for this? What I recommend is like get Indian food takeout without the naan. Because Indian food tends to be like largely gluten-free. I don't know. I might even say that about a lot of different takeout. Not Chinese food. Maybe like, listen, you can even get pad thai, get rice noodles. There are people, there's all this debate about what's kosher for Passover. Listen, don't worry about it. Okay, but I did want to mention that about the meal in the spirit of Passover. Maybe not something that's like not so leavened. Maybe no wheat-based food. Okay. All right. Now, on to, you have the stuff you need. And wasn't I right? Isn't this easy? This is easy stuff, right? You've got your bathroom cups, you've got your coffee mugs, you've got all your little, you went to Kroger, you got the parsley and, you know, the natural peanut butter, you're good. Now, but Rabbi Leanne, what do we do? We've got all this symbolic food, what do we do with it? Okay. Now, the reason I told you to close your Amazon window and that you don't need a Haggadah and I don't want you to stress about buying one is that I have something to offer you. This is something that I started putting in my Passover care packages in 2023. It is a one sheet Haggadah, one piece of paper front and back, a Haggadah, the Passover service, the Passover prayers that we do, the readings that we do at the Passover Seder table. Yes, you can fit it on one sheet front and back of paper. You know what they say actually about how to tell if you know something. Right? How to tell if you understand something. The way you can tell if somebody understands something is if they are capable of explaining it simply. If you can explain rocket science to a kindergartner, oh, you are a true expert. You are a rocket scientist. Okay. If you can explain anything to a small child or someone who has never been introduced to the idea before, then you really understand it. And I think that's last year when I said, let me see if I can do front and back Haggadah. Now, I had already had experience in really abbreviating the Passover Seder because I wanted, when I worked at Ohio State Hillel, I wanted other people besides me to be able to lead the Seder. Because at certain times at Ohio State Hillel, which is the Jewish Student Center on campus, they would host Passover Seder for the students. Wonderful, especially if it's like Tuesday, they can't go home, they're in the middle of finals, whatever it is. The issue is that there would be one rabbi, And the Seder room would be full. Thank God it was full. There were so many students coming. Do you know how difficult it is to lead a Seder for like 100 people? Everyone's talking. Everyone's this. Everyone's that. You're shushing. And there is nothing I hate more at a religious service than shushing. Please. Shh. No. No. We're not doing that. So I had the idea I wanted every single person on our staff. So the Israel fellow and the programming fellow and the Jewish education specialist and the director of Hillel and the assistant director of Hillel to lead their own smaller Seder. And it would be like themed. Okay. So I already had to narrow it down to like, what are the things you absolutely have to do for it to be quote unquote legit? But this was next level, this front and back Passover Seder. But guys, I did it. And those of you who got my Passover care package last year, you received it in the mail. And guess what? I laminated it so that if you spill your fourth glass of wine on it because you're just so happy that it's Passover, you're having such a great time, fine, then it's still there for next year. I am going, if you've made it this far in the podcast, we're like half an hour, 35 minutes into the podcast. If you've made it this far, I want to alert you. I'm going to link the file. It's like a Canva file right now. But no, do I have a PDF? Canva link is probably easier. I'm going to put in the show notes. Any one of you can go to this link, download it, print it for your own Seder. Okay. That's why I told you not to buy a Haggadah. Spend your money on like, I don't know, maybe go buy a Seder plate. Spend your money on something else, unless you really want to buy a Haggadah, okay? And I will also link in there, I also have a diagram of a Seder plate. If it's hard for you to visualize things just based on listening to it, I have a diagram of a Seder plate that I also send in all my Passover care packages. I will link it in these show notes, okay? So anybody in the great wide world can see the one sheet Passover Seder and see the Seder plate explanation, a little illustration. So if you're stressed about Seder and you have no idea what you're doing and you're like, I literally know nothing about what happens at a Passover Seder. I know nothing. Okay, here's what I want you to do. Step one, fill up your first glass of wine. Remember I said it's traditional to have four? So you don't have to make a big glass, just do a little one, okay? Remember, we're all about symbolic, okay? Say the blessing over wine. Okay, That's on the one cheap cedar. If you don't know it, you know, look it up. Jewish blessing over wine. It's Baruch Atah Adonai Eloheinu Melech HaOlam Borei Pari HaGafen. It's one of the first prayers that we teach little children. So if you went through Hebrew school or in any way, then you probably, it's somewhere knocking around in the head of yours. Fine. Now you've got the parsley. Pass around the parsley. Give everybody at your table a little bit. There is a blessing we say for this. It is on the one sheet Haggadah. I don't want you to worry about saying it. I just want you to mention that we have this symbolic food because it's green and it's a symbol of new life. It connects us to the earth. It comes from, the blessing says thank you for the fruit of the earth. So mention that it connects us to the earth, the rhythms of the seasons, whatever conversation you want to have about that. If you want to get fancy with leading your Seder, by the way, the easiest way to make it longer and to make it more involved and multifaceted is to ask questions. So instead of saying what parsley represents, ask, what do you all think parsley represents? Now, somebody's going to say, like, I think it represents the Green Bay Packers. Fine. Well, we get really excited about the Green Bay Packers and we root for them. And you know what? We get excited about Passover and root for Passover too. You can connect anything back to saying, to telling the story. Okay. Now, the next step, step three, you've got your stack of matzah, right? I told you to get matzah. One box is fine, by the way, just for the Seder. Just get one box. You don't have to get the 5-pack. Lift up your stack of matzah. And I want you to say this quote, "This is the bread of suffering, which our ancestors ate in the land of Egypt. Let all who are hungry come and eat. This year we are slaves, next year may we be free." Now, this is one of the oldest parts of the Haggadah. And how can we tell? Because it is written in the Seder book, in the Haggadah, it is written in Aramaic, which was the language that Jesus spoke, which was the vernacular at the time, obviously. And so we know that this, it's a foreign language to us now. It's actually dead language. Aramaic is dead. But we still know it was the vernacular, which means that when we say it in English, it's actually in the spirit of the original service, which was to say this part in the vernacular. Why? Because it is the center. Okay? It is the center of the story. This matzah represents the whole story. This is the bread that represents when we were suffering. And we want everyone to be able to partake of it because we are going to remember that our desire and our goal is to be free. So that's the beginning of step four, which we're going into now, telling the story of the Exodus from Egypt. Now, I do not care. I literally do not care how you tell this story of the Exodus from Egypt. In a traditional Seder, this is the Magid. If you grew up going to Seders, you will recognize this term, the Magid. This is the longest part of the Seder traditionally. It is what keeps people around the table for hours and hours. And it is what is the cause of the joke that we come to the Seder and we just know we're going to be hungry the whole time because this is, we can't eat until we get through this part. Okay. But if you have a negative association with that and you want to focus on how to make this the quickest part of your Seder, that's fine. You can do the official parts now and you can talk more about the story once you're eating. That's fine. Okay. So that in a traditional Seder, here are some things that you may recognize from whatever Jewish knowledge you have, maybe from a movie you've seen. Okay. The first thing that sort of introduces the telling of the story, the Magid, is the four questions. So there, it's represented by, oh, there's four questions. Okay. And it's asking about the interesting stuff on the Seder table. So why is there matzah? Why do we eat bitter herbs? Why are we sitting in a luxurious fashion, reclining or with our beautiful clothing, right? And the answers to those questions tell the story of the Exodus from Egypt, which is the point of the Seder, as I said, okay? You don't have to do the four questions, but you can. If you want to Google what are the four questions, look at the one-page Haggadah, they're all on there. The next part that is ubiquitous in every single Seder that I've been to is mentioning the plagues. Now, the reason that I encourage you to mention the plagues is because this is where you get to have like toy frogs, sunglasses to represent the plague of darkness. We have lots of candy. We use like Swedish fish to represent the blood in the Nile. We have, this is disgusting, but we use gushers to represent boils. And we even use Sour Patch Kids to represent the death of the firstborn. I know. but this is where pretty much all the Passover tchotchkes come out, like the little toys that you associate with Passover. So I encourage you to do that. But if for whatever reason you don't like it, you know, don't stress about it too much. The last thing that is really, really important for the traditional Seder to mention are these three symbols, the symbols of the shank bone, what it means. So it represents the Passover sacrifice. The matzah, which we already talked about what it means, and bitter food, which represents the bitterness of a life of slavery. Okay. All those explanations are in very short order on the one sheet Seder that you can download in these show notes. If you don't know the greater story at all, if I've made some references that you're like, what even is that? What are you talking about? Just Google it. I am not even kidding. Google the story of the Exodus from Egypt. I'm not going to tell it to you on this podcast because I don't have time. And people who know it, they didn't come here to hear the story of the Exodus. They came here to hear how to lead a Seder if you know nothing. Okay. You can find retellings all over the internet for the story of the Exodus from Egypt. Real quick, Google. Okay. I'd recommend maybe like don't, if a website's like obviously Christian, don't go to that one if you're trying to have a Jewish Seder. Okay. Some people have this custom, a belief that you should not mention Moses when you tell the story at all. Moses, who's like the guy, you know, with the Ten Commandments and the staff and whatever. His story is so wild. But in the traditional Haggadah, the one that we have from, you know, 500 years ago, we do not see Moses appear at all. That does happen to be the custom in my house. My kids got around it one year when Encanto, which I cannot stand the movie, and they know it, and they use it to troll me. So they started singing, "We don't talk about Moses." Okay. So they did get Moses in there, but it was sort of like not by not putting it. Okay, whatever. Do whatever you want. If you like the story of Moses, which I do like the story of Moses, and that is a compelling way for you to connect to Passover, go for it. Do a literary analysis. I don't know. Enjoy yourself. All right. I'm just here to say, you Google it, you do what you need to do. I promise you, in my home, in addition to Seders that I have overseen professional capacity, the storytelling portion of the Passover Seder was Rugrats Passover. Sometimes if you want to spend a little more time, you watch The Prince of Egypt. Ask yourself, at the end of Rugrats Passover, did you hear the story of the Jewish people and their exodus from Egypt? Yes, then you did it. Maybe you are ridiculous like my younger daughter and I, and you are obsessed with Broadway. You want to figure out which Broadway songs or which Disney songs go along with the story of the Passover story, the exodus from Egypt. You want to line them up and sing them all as a group. Enjoy yourself, whatever. Okay. You're doing the retelling of the story. Okay. Now you did that. Well done. I know that wasn't easy. Okay. Now you pour your second cup of wine. You had to get through that whole telling of the story of the Exodus from Egypt on one cup of wine and some parsley. All right. Don't worry about it. Pour your second cup of wine. Now I want you to say this. This is also on the Haggadah. Don't worry. It's on the one sheet Haggadah. I want you to say this. Friends, in every generation, we must pause and imagine that we ourselves were slaves in Egypt. Say that quote. And why is this important? And why do I make sure to include it? Because the Passover Seder is not meant to be a service. It's meant to be an experience, right? And we have always been very serious about imagining ourselves in that role, trying very hard to sympathize with what it must have felt like, what people must have been worried about. Because in order to really appreciate the fact that we are not slaves, we need to imagine that we could be slaves. Okay. So I do want you to say that line. I really do. I want you to say that line. Drink the second cup of wine and eat dinner. Yes, you made it to dinner. And hopefully, you know, if you made it to dinner quickly, send me a message, yourjewishweddingpodcast@gmail.com, and let me know how long it took you to get to dinner. In our house, we can get there pretty fast. Okay. Enjoy dinner. Hopefully there's no what we call chametz. Hopefully there's no bread, nothing leavened, on the wheat, you know, parsley, whatever. Not parsley. There is parsley. Barley. Whatever. I'm not the Seder, please. I'm not going to come check. Finish eating. If you are going to do an afikoman hunt, which all the way back when we lifted up the matzah and said this is the bread of suffering, remember? In some houses, especially if there's like a kid, they'll break the middle one and put half of the middle one in the stack, and then the other half to hide it. Okay. If it's a very small child, you hide it in an easy to find place. If it's an older child, you like hang it in the basement ceiling rafters or whatever. You know, ask me how I know. My youngest child will be 12 at this year's Seder. God willing, we still do an Afikoman hunt, and it is all of the middle and high schooler favorite part of the Seder still. Okay. We've taught our kids that whoever finds it has to bargain with the leader of the Seder that she won't give it back unless every kid gets a prize. Every kid gets a present. In our house, all the kids always get a prize. We always nudge them towards that. I get little silly gifts and wrap them up, and then they unwrap them and they can switch. We tried doing cash and like gift cards one year. They didn't like it as much. They like to get the little tchotchkes or the silly gift. They like to get like the confetti cannon or the Lego set or whatever it is that, you know, we found. There's bubble guns. There's like a disco, like a little plug-in mini disco ball. There's all kinds of stuff. There's stuffies. So we do that. And my kids get very excited for it. They try to like find the ones that they want to get and like somehow mark it on the wrapping paper. And anyway, so if you want to have an Afikoman hunt, do that. It's super fun. Finish the meal with a bite of the matzah that the kid gave to you, or just any of the matzah. Now, this is an important step, and I'm not kidding. I want you to take this moment and make sure that at this point in the meal, you express gratitude. Okay, so traditionally, this was like a bunch of psalms from the Book of Psalms, and we would be grateful for the food that we have and the person who cooked it and God who gives us safety or hope in difficult times. But you can express gratitude in any way you feel moved to, okay? Maybe you're expressing gratitude to yourself that you were brave enough and that you pulled yourself together enough to do this Passover Seder. If you're being hosted by someone, please say thank you so much and try to help, you know, because this is a lot of cooking and a lot of setup. It doesn't have to be, but a lot of times it is. Express gratitude, okay? All right, we are almost to the end of the Seder. Can you believe it? Our bellies are full, and we've had 2 cups of wine so far, so we probably at this point don't care what time it is or how long it's been, but this year's Seder is Monday and Tuesday night, so we may be a little antsy, especially if we have children, we may be a little antsy to end. Fine, we're almost to the end. The next step is drink the third cup of wine. I didn't forget about those 4 cups. Now drink your third cup. Now say you can eat dessert while you're doing it. You know, you don't have to eat dessert as part of the main meal. That's okay. Drink the third cup. Now you say some concluding thing. This is the next step. You can say a hope for the year ahead. May this be a peaceful year for all of us. May we all gather together like this next year. I'm so glad we did this. We learned so much. Whatever it is, say something that summarizes your experience. You could go around the table and say what you're thankful for. I don't care. But say something that like closes it up, you know, that signals that, you know, we're done and we did this thing that we were supposed to do. And don't we feel connected to our people and to our history and to our past? Now we sure do. This was such a great idea. And then, you know, drink your fourth cup and then stay as long as you want or help scrub a pot or something. I don't know. Now, you're done. Yay. That's amazing. Well done. Good job. If that was your first Seder that you hosted, that was a lot. I said it was going to be simple, and to me, it's simple, but I know it was a lot, okay? I hope it didn't feel too complicated or technical, but there's steps, you know? I understand that. I do recognize that. Okay, now that was the most basic, barest of bare bones Seder, but it gets the job done, and remember, what was that job? We are celebrating the Exodus from Egypt. We are celebrating the fact that we are free, and we are recognizing that there is still more work to do for our freedom. You wanted to include some traditional foods, fine. You did it. There you go. Okay, whether I don't care if you had horseradish or kimchi or wasabi, whatever. You had your maror, you did it. There you go. Okay, and just like anything else, you know, the more you know, if you're at all disappointed with the way you're planning Seder this year, oh, it's not enough. Oh, I don't know enough. This doesn't make sense to me. Don't worry, because God willing, we will be back here next year. We will be doing Seder next year. Together again, God willing. Just like anything else, the more you know, the more you will change and add. There are things that you cannot know about Seder until you go through a Seder. So you just did that step, that first step in learning. Every year you're going to learn more, okay? And the most important thing is not knowing everything before you start. In fact, the most important thing is starting, because that is how we learn the most, okay? And I know that this might seem really simplistic. I'm not trying to talk to you like you're children or you don't know things. I'm trying to get you to a place of starting. If you have questions about the Seder, ask. The point of the Seder is to ask. We ask questions, right? Ask someone who you think might know. If that person doesn't know, they'll say, let me find out. Hopefully you can Google it. You can email me. You can email the Shul Rabbi closest to you. You know, meet some new people. Do not be afraid of looking silly. Don't be afraid of looking stupid. Don't be afraid of looking like a discount Jew. You're not. You're a Jew like everybody else. Please. This is how we keep people from learning, is by feeling afraid to ask. The entire point of the Seder is to teach and to learn. Right? Teaching and learning are dependent on one another. We can't celebrate something we don't know. We can't celebrate if we don't understand. We can't celebrate something we don't feel a connection to. So that's the reason for this whole podcast, the starting point. Knowing and understanding and connection grows as we grow. And thank God, that is the way that it's supposed to be. Now, I want to close with support from the Jewish past of having a fun and silly Seder. If you know anything about my Seder, I am a child. I've got like slingshot frogs. I've got like chickens that make noises. We've got hats we make people wear, like the cow hat and the chicken hats and there's frog hats. Okay, frogs and the plagues. The reason we make the meal so ridiculous, right? And a nice word for it is unique. The reason it's such a unique meal for Passover, with so many symbolic foods and the tchotchkes and the toys and the four glasses of wine, like who drinks four glasses of wine, is because it's supposed to make people say, this is weird. What's going on here? Because when people ask what's going on, that gives us a chance to explain something. That gives us a chance to teach something. It challenges us to constantly innovate and add something new. Now, here is your support from the past. In the Mishneh Torah, which was written by the Rambam, which if you are a Big Lebowski fan, you're a fan of like, when did the Big Lebowski come out? Late 90s movies, these cult movies. There's a guy in the Big Lebowski. He quotes the Rambam a lot. Okay, the Rambam was a real guy and he wrote a lot of stuff. He was very prolific, a genius, died young, unfortunately, before he could write even more things. He wrote the Mishneh Torah, which was a compendium of Jewish law that would be accessible to normal people who could not afford more than four books, which is how many books this body of Jewish law takes up from the Rambam. So he's giving us advice somewhere in these four books, in the section on leavened and unleavened bread. And chapter 7, verse 3, if you want the reference, I'll put it also in the show notes. He gives this advice for leading your Seder. The Rambam says, whoever is leading the Seder should make changes on this so that the children will see and they will want to ask, Manishtana halayla hazem mikol halelot. Why is this night different from all other nights? That's the most important thing I want for you all who are, you know, maybe you tuned into this podcast, even though it says your Jewish wedding podcast, your Jewish Passover podcast today. Because you don't know if you can manage to lead a Seder. You're worried about it for all the reasons we discussed. The most important, this night is different. This holiday is different. We take a moment to remember where we came from and where we want to go. And the miracle of our existence, especially, you know, in these times, the miracle of the persistence of the Jewish people depends on someone saying, can you please explain this? Why is this night different from all other nights? I love moments like this where I feel like I connect to the past and I feel like talking to you all, I'm connecting to the future. If you have found this episode helpful in any way, even if you just felt like a little inspired, or, you know, maybe you're going to add matzah to your table this week, the week coming up for Passover. You know, even if you weren't planning on having a Seder, or maybe you were going to have a dinner party without any of the symbolic stuff, but now you are, if you feel inspired to learn more about Judaism and to connect in some way, and this podcast has done that for you, please take a moment to subscribe, do you give a thumbs up? Like, I guess, that's not on YouTube only, I don't know. Please leave a review. And it's not for my own ego, because God knows I'm sitting here talking to a computer screen. I know I'm talking to all of you, but I'm sitting here, you know, taking time out of my day. I wouldn't do that just for review. I don't need your guys' reviews personally. Who does need your reviews? People who are just like you, who are reaching out, trying to connect with some aspect of Judaism, maybe because they want to have a Jewish wedding, maybe because they're just looking for some tips. Your review will help them understand that that's what this podcast does for regular people, right? I can say it all I want, but nothing matters as much as a review. So please, whatever platform you're listening on, go ahead and do that. It can be really quick. Like, you know, Rabbi Leanne's a little nuts and she talks a lot, but I got something valuable out of this, whatever it is. Or if you like me a little more or a little less, don't try to be nice, okay? Don't give me like a one. I mean, you can give whatever review you want, but I'm not asking for one-star reviews. Do you see what I'm saying? Because it helps people, because it helps people connect. And at the end of the day, I am never going to be a famous podcast. I can't even imagine wanting to be famous. But if I have connected with you all and helped you connect to your heritage, the past, and the rich knowledge and culture and tradition and celebrations of the Jewish people, then I will feel so happy. And the way I'll know that is if you leave a review, and other people will then do that too. And hopefully, God willing, we will go and grow from strength to strength. So with that said, all of you, remember, you can download a couple of the resources I talked about in the show notes. Please do that for yourselves. Do a little preparation, print it off, or at least, you know, put it on your phones, text it to everybody. I don't know. And in whatever way you are planning to celebrate Passover, even if it's just buying that box of matzah, I want to wish you from the bottom of my heart a happy, healthy, sweet Passover for you and everyone you love. Next time on this podcast, we are going to hear an interview with Reverend Mercedes Ibarra, Reverend Mercy on Instagram, who is going to speak about bilingual ceremonies and traditional but untraditional ceremonies. You're going to love to hear from her. I just know it. So until next time.
Well, everyone, I have had the best time being your rabbi for this episode. I'm so glad you joined me for another little bit of insight into planning your perfect Jewish or interfaith wedding. Until you can smash that glass on your big day, you'd might as well smash that subscribe button for this podcast. I don't want you to miss a single thing. Remember, you can always find me, Rabbi Leanne, on Instagram at Your Ohio Rabbi, all one word, for even more tips, tricks, recommendations, and wisdom on Jewish weddings. If you want to work with me on your wedding, you'll find all the info you need at yourohiorabbi.com. Until next time, remember, you deserve the perfect wedding for you. Don't settle for anything less.